Mother Nature don't draw straight lines, broken molds in a grand design. We look a mess, but we're doing fine. We can't carry lifelong members of the union of different kinds.
Welcome to the Pivotal Podcast, Rafiq. Very nice to have you. First of all, could you just tell the listeners your background, your history, where do you come from, what do you do? Because they might not have heard of you so far away.
So, my name's Rafiq Taylor. I was born and brought up down Cardiff Bay, the lovingly known as the Docks. I'm of mixed race, which has sort of shaped my life. From early, I got into rugby quite late. I didn't start until I was 34, I think. And within the year of starting, I was training in the Welsh camp.
Within a year?
Within a year, yes.
Wow. Yes. That's quite something.
Yes, very much so. Very surreal. Very surreal. And also was playing for the Blues alongside that as well, Cardiff Blues as well. Played sevens for them. Been around the world playing sevens.
When you say them, Wales.
Oh, sorry, Wales, yeah. Yeah. Been around the world, been to Russia, Spain, Dubai, you know, the list is endless. I also was part of the squad that went to France for the 2014 World Cup. An absolutely amazing experience that I never even imagined was a possibility until I was kind of going, yeah. which is quite weird. That was, like I said, 2014. I then was no longer playing for Welsh Rugby Union. But then in, I think it was 2019, maybe, I started playing Rugby League. And again, within a year, captained the Welsh squad. So was dual-capped, the first female dual-capped international in Wales. The first captain of Wales, the first captain of colour of Wales. And played that for a couple of years, and then we had a, how can I put it? We had a differing of opinions.
Okay.
Which is why I no longer play for them.
For
Wales Rugby League.
Okay.
The other part of my life is I'm a firefighter. I have been for 25 years now, I'm currently stationed at Cardiff Central Fire Station by the prison. Absolutely love my job. Still after 25 years, can't wait to go to work. Absolutely love it there. And another side of my life is I'm a single parent to a 16-year-old boy and have been a single parent for most of his life.
So we've got a significant talent here at 34, which, forgive me, that you probably at your peak, but we've missed you for 14 years, probably. How did we not get hold of you?
Rugby wasn't around when I was in school. We weren't allowed to play rugby. We weren't even allowed to play football, really. We could only play hockey. They would only let the girls play hockey. So women's rugby wasn't even on my radar. And I love men's rugby. And then especially joining the fire service, obviously the men watch it, and we used to go as a watch and go and watch the Six Nations either in the stadium or in the pub, and you know. So absolutely loved rugby as an adult the entire time, but it was never on my radar. I never saw it, I never heard about it, I honestly did not even know it existed. I really didn't.
So when you were growing up and in the fire service, did you have any sort of players that you, I know probably men at that stage,
men,
but
yeah, absolutely.
Who would have those players been, just to reference the sort of the timeline?
Yeah, so when I first started going to watch rugby, there was obviously Alan Wynne-Jones, Justin Tipperick and those kind of people. They were the ones, I guess, that kind of meant something to me. They were the ones that I watched and was like, wow, these people are fantastic. Because like I said, first going out with the watch to watch rugby, which was 25 years ago, I wasn't a rugby fan. I wasn't anything. And if I'm honest, I went to fit in. I went because that's what they were doing as a group, so I kind of needed to go. I was neither here nor there about it. I didn't like it and I didn't hate it. I was neither here nor there about the whole thing. But then watching it and watching the talent and watching, and I can appreciate good sports. I can appreciate good players. I can appreciate the sportsmanship. So watching these players, and I was just like, this is fantastic. I love this. You know, your Neil Jenkins, just wow. You know, and like I said, I can appreciate that. So seeing these people come through, I was just like, oh my God, I love it. And then going to watch more and more and more, that's when you start paying attention and you start...
So were you playing any other sports?
Absolutely not, no.
No sport whatsoever?
No, so...
And then you... So tell us about your first... You must have come across rugby with your boots on at some point. So what happened there?
Okay, so what happened there was I was on a little bit of a date and he had a boy the same age as my boy, which I think they were probably about four. I think they were probably about four or five, maybe. And we were taking them to the cinema. But in his previous relationship, he had a babysitter. And although the relationship had broken down, he was still friendly with the babysitter. So this particular day when we were taking the boys to the cinema, he was like, oh, my babysitter's playing rugby. Can we go and watch?
And the babysitter was a girl?
And the babysitter was a girl, yeah.
Oh, right.
So
yeah.
Firstly, I was like, what? Wow, okay. But then I was a little bit like, hold on a second. It's not been the bestest of weathers. We're going to the cinema and you want to take the boys to a muddy field. Really?
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, look, we'll only go for 5 minutes just to show her that, you know. And I was like, okay, I appreciate that sentiment. Yes, we'll go. So we went and, you know, and you have the word with the boys in the car. Right, come on, you know, you need to try and stay clean because we're going to go to the cinema. The one you covered head to toe in mud. Obviously fell on deaf ears, but that's another story. And we were stood there and it couldn't have been more than 5 minutes. And I said to him, we need to go now. And he was like, why? What's wrong? And I said, there's nothing wrong. I said, but if we don't go now, I'm going to go and find one of them over there and get some boots and a pair of shorts and a top and I'm going to play. So we need to go for you, for that not to happen. And he was like, right, okay, yeah, we'll go. But I'll put you in touch with Mel, the babysitter. I'll put you in touch with her and you can go training next week. Absolutely fantastic. And that was on a Sunday, obviously, because women play on a Sunday. And the team that we went to watch was Barry Bomets, and they train on a Monday. So I rang her, I messaged her the next morning, obviously explained to her who I was, and that I wanted to come. And she said, yeah, I'll come and get you and we'll go together and we'll go training. And that's
it. And so how long after that first time you touched a rugby ball were you playing for Wales?
Okay, so... that was, I don't know exactly when in the season that was, but shortly after being in those training sessions, they were doing talent ID days for Cardiff Blues.
Oh, right, yeah.
And the team was going to me, you need to go. And I was like, you are crazy. Like, that's not happening. No, no, you have to go, you have to go. And I was like, no, I'm not. No, I'm not going. And I don't think I went then. I think I went the next time. And when I went the next time, again, crazy story. So when I went the next time, I did my thing. And I'm sat in the house then, waiting for an email, a phone call, however they contact you to tell you whether or not you're in or out. And my phone rings. And I was like, oh my God, this is them. Oh, wow. Hello. And she says, hi, my name's Sophie Bennett. And I was like, okay. And she said, I'm the team manager for Wales. What? 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 What are you ringing me for? And she was like, oh, we want you to come and train. We were at the Blues Trials and we saw you and we want you to come and train with us and all this. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I can do that. Are you available this Wednesday? I was like, yeah, no problem. Right, turn up, come this time. If you come and find me, we'll give you kit. And I was like, oh, yeah.
That was a big step.
Yeah. So, and I kind of put the phone down, sort of going, what? I don't know how to feel. I don't know what to say because I have no idea what just happened. Not the foggiest. But I then distinctly remember being sat still waiting, still horrendously anxious, waiting to hear from the Blues to see if I got into the Blues.
You got in the Wales team, now you're worried about the Blues.
Yeah. But like I said, because I had no sort of concept of what had actually happened.
Do you think it was a prank call at first?
I guess.
Because that would be a very rugby thing to do,
well,
wouldn't it?
Exactly. So I was literally just, I have absolutely no idea what's going on. But we'll put that over there, because this is the important thing, waiting for the Blues notification.
So the talent ID people want to know, what is it they saw in that trial? What was it they noticed about you that thought, fast-track that person?
Speed,
okay.
Yes, and strength, because I've always been quite athletic, even though I sort of didn't do anything athletic after I left school. Obviously, because of my job, I'm fit, I'm healthy, I'm strong, and I've always been quick. And it kind of, my speed has got nothing to do with it doesn't seem to have anything to do with my fitness or my age, because it's just always.
So you're still available to play now?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when you say speed, do you give the coaches on this who are listening some sort of marker? Do you have a, like, 100-metre speed or a 10-metre speed or something so they can put this in context?
I don't have a recent one.
Right.
But one I did take, let me see if I can find it, because I put it on my notes, because I was chuffed with it at the time.
So just for the listeners, we're looking on, we're actually sitting in a car outside Starbucks making this recording. It's very high-tech. And Rafiq's just looking on her phone, so let's see what we come up with.
There. Ah, okay. So 10 metres was 1.6 seconds. 1.66 seconds, and 40 metres was 5.33 seconds.
So you're probably a just over 11-second sprinter.
Yeah, I guess,
still?
Yeah.
And I have to be careful what I do now, but how old were you when you first played for Wales?
34.
And how long ago was that? So I haven't really asked you the question, have I? You're running 11, just around 11 seconds or 100 metres at how old?
45.
Bloody hell. And you're still available?
I'm still available.
Wow. So I think there might be a few coaches. You might be getting another phone call. And so that they know, what position did you play?
So I was wing.
Right.
Yeah, I can play fullback as well. And I've recently changed teams that I've played wing like the entire 10 years. But I've recently changed teams, and it's not because my speed has dropped. It's because my knowledge of the game, and I can help out more. So he's moved me into 13.
Oh, right. Okay. So you're still playing currently.
Yes.
And you're running 100 metres in about 11 seconds, and you're fit and healthy.
Yeah.
Wow. This wasn't meant to be a talent ID no. podcast. This is all about, and perhaps we ought to draw it back, but that's just, I think the coaches listening are going, what? Hang on a minute. So where are you playing at the moment?
St Genneth.
Oh, right. Okay. And just playing social rugby?
Yes.
Or? Right. We might need to revisit that. Might be making a phone call after this. Right. Let's progress the podcast, because the podcast is called Pivotal.
For sure.
And the idea is that... coaches are from all different backgrounds, all different life experiences, and it's about talking to people who have had highly successful careers, which is you, and seeing if there are any pivotal experiences that they went through that informed the way they think about the world. So that's a big question.
For sure.
But is there a pivotal experience that you think you've had that informs you?
Yeah, I think up until this point, I was very insecure in my abilities, I guess, and very sort of, I need to stay within my lane type of thinking.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, being from down the docks and living the life we lived at the time, I thought it was amazing. And it's not until later that you realise. And that lane wasn't massively out there. You know, like you see all those famous people and I guess some kids are like, oh my God, I could do that. It was never a thought I had. I was like, oh my God, they must be special.
Yeah.
And then I joined the fire service and I didn't have the greatest of starts. Bullied a little bit. I can't put it down what it was down to. I don't know if they were just bullies. I don't know if it was down to being a female. I don't know if it was down to being black. Nothing was ever said. They were just mean.
Okay.
They were just mean to me. And this one day we had a call, but the two specific gentlemen who were mean to me, they weren't there. There was two other gentlemen there that I've never worked with, that I didn't know. I hadn't been in the job very long at this point. Maybe a year.
Right.
Give or take.
So you were young in the job and young in age?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was probably about 22, 23 tops. And like I said, I'd been in the job about a year. And it was a night shift and we got called out to an industrial accident. A guy had climbed on some racking. It fell over and a big chunk of metal fell on him. So straight off, I was like, oh, I don't really know.
Had you seen a dead body at this
Absolutely
point?
Absolutely not.
All right.
I hadn't even seen like a bad accident type thing.
Oh, right.
So this was...
I'd imagine there was quite a lot of blood. Okay.
Yes, quite a lot. But back in those days, nobody could pronounce death, even though he was clearly dead. So we still had to treat him like he was alive. We still had to perform CPR and give him all the drugs and dignity and you know, and all those things.
Mm.
And then when we managed to get him into the back of the ambulance, there was obviously only two crew in the ambulance, and the one asked if we could render help. So being new in the job and part of the probation period of my job, it was suggested that I went. So I went, I'm in the back of the ambulance, I'm performing CPR, I'm clearing the airways, I'm kind of on autopilot doing whatever the paramedic is telling me to do.
Mm.
Not really thinking, just listening and doing, listening and doing, listening and doing. We got then to the hospital and the ambulance could go on blues and twos, but the fire engine coming to get me had to go on normal road speed.
Yeah.
So I was then at the hospital for a while waiting for the fire engine. And in that time, that's when you kind of sit and realise what's just happened. You can see them working on him in the room. So there's this whole realisation going on of what is going on. And it kind of hit me. And I was like, whoa, this is big.
Mm.
This is bigger than me.
It's a traumatic yes. event, isn't it? Yeah.
And this is like the biggest thing I've ever witnessed, never mind being involved in. You know, and then the fire engine come and pick me up, and again in the back of the fire engine, and it drives us back to station, and I'm sat there kind of going, ooh, I might have made a mistake here. I'm not sure I can do this.
The job.
Right. Yes, I'm not sure I'm cut out for this. Because
yeah.
I was really upset. And, you know, when you're thinking things like, you know, this poor fella went to work on a night shift, said to his missus or his kids or whoever, you know, oh, I'll see you tomorrow. Should we go and...
Yeah.
You know, should we make plans? Should we live a life? Should we go for dinner? Should we, you know, and all, and then, you know, and that's not happening anymore. And then how do the kids feel? And how do, the, you know, the other people in his life? And I'm going, oh my God, this is a bit much. So then back at the fire station, then I was, you know, by myself pondering these thoughts and seriously considering my future in the fire service, like really yeah. seriously considering it. And then these two gentlemen started a conversation. So I joined in the conversation and we got chatting, and it might sound really bad, but it's a coping mechanism that we were kind of like having a joke, not a joke at his expense by any stretch of the imagination, but just trying to make light of the whole situation. So we had that chat, and obviously I was told, don't think about, like, can't think about those things. You have to...
This is the two other firemen. Helping you to
yes.
sort stuff out in your head.
For sure, yeah. You know, you can't think about it like that. You have to think about that's just how it was meant to be, you know. And so I was like, oh, okay, yeah, for sure. And then in the morning then, we had another chat around the table, again, laughing and joking. And like I said, as I'm saying it, I know it sounds terrible, but... It's a coping mechanism.
It's very common amongst military yeah. first responders.
For sure.
That happens. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, having that conversation, that joviality, that laughing, and I went home the next day, and I was like, I went home that day then, and I was like, I can do this. I definitely can do this. Also followed by the thought of, I am very glad those two men were there, and it wasn't the two men on my watch.
The two that were bullying
yes.
behaviour.
Yes. Yeah. Because had it have been those two, we wouldn't have had those conversations. I wouldn't have been pointed in the right direction. And I probably would have handed my notice in.
Wow. What would you call that? Was it kindness or was it... What was it that those two did that effectively kept you in the job?
For sure, that's what happened. From my memory, I wouldn't say it was like an outright act of kindness.
Right.
I just think that's what normal people would do.
Yeah.
Help somebody through what clearly was a very bad situation, and they could see we're struggling with it a little bit.
Yeah. So first up, they recognised you struggling.
For sure.
And then they helped.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that contrasts completely to the other two.
Completely.
Who would have used that as a lever to get stuck into you.
Definitely.
And why do you think they would do something like that?
They just weren't nice people at all. And when you're in the situation, it's very personal and it's very hard to try and see what is wrong, that it's them and not you.
Yeah.
It's hard to see that there's something wrong with them and not something wrong with you. And which is something else I think that incident showed me, was that it's not me. Yeah. It is them. And then I don't remember the exact timeline of how long after that incident I then come off that station and went to a different station and a different watch. But then being out of the situation, you can see the bigger picture and you can see that, like, it isn't you. It is, yeah. it definitely is them. But they, yeah, they were just really vile, vile human beings. And the longer I've stayed in the job, the more I've realised that, like I said, they were just vile people. And when I did become strong enough to tell people, like, what had happened, people were saying to me, we don't understand why the brigade put you on that watch. Because they were known for it.
Mm. We won't go into why they put you on the watch, but
no.
We might like, I would like to reflect with you, take that into a sports context. Mm-hmm. You've probably been through a similar thing where when you started rugby, a bit more life experience, uh-huh. but you've gone into a new environment.
Mm-hmm.
And were there people like these two fire officers that said, hey, this is new for you, come on in? Was it quite welcoming?
On the most part, it was, yes. There were people along the way that thought they were bigger than the team and thought they had an opinion on whether or not I deserved to be there and things like that. And then you see actively looking, like, you know, the play, and they've got the ball and they've made a break, or there's somebody going to tackle them or whatever, and you see them look, see it's you, and go, oh, no, I'll keep hold of that and take it in. And then exactly the same situation however many phases later or however many games later, and they look and they see someone else and the ball goes, and they're like, oh, okay.
Because that's a really fast decision. That's got to be some sort of deep bias, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, because it's not cognitive.
No.
Wow. Were you able to address it? Was the coach aware? Were you able to take them up on that?
No. So what started happening, I think it was realised, and I think what started happening was the coach would then sort of, not make moves around me, I don't want to say that, but wanted the wingers and the back three more involved.
Yeah.
So would make moves where the back three received the ball. So I still got hands on ball and I still did what I do, but still in open play, you could still kind of see the, and it, now I'm thinking about it as well, you see the, if they don't have the time to make that decision and they pass the ball anyway,
yeah,
you can see the disappointment in their face.
Really?
Yeah. Or if you make a mistake or you drop it or you know, it gets turned over in the ruck or whatever, it's like, it's personal. It's right. Not like, oh yeah, that happened, let's just move on and get the ball back or whatever.
And should we name that? No, not the people.
Ah, okay.
No, name why you think they had that bias against you.
It's really hard. It is really hard to put a finger on it without the knowledge.
Mm.
But there is one standout thing that makes me different to them. And that's the colour of my skin.
It's terribly sad, isn't it?
A little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But this podcast is about talking to coaches, explaining these pivotal experience so they can learn from that and go, wow. So is there... So you've given us two massive pivotal experiences there. So thank you. We got double for our money there.
Wow.
What advice would you give to coaches listening to this podcast that would enable them to support a player from your background that perhaps had experienced some of the negatives you've experienced? What could the coaches do? What should they be looking for, take action on? How should they respond?
Well, firstly, it's the understanding of the coach and like, talk to me, find out where I've come from, find out what I've been through, find out what I notice, because you won't notice it.
Right.
And I get that, but I will. So yeah. Ask me, because I'll tell you. And then hopefully what will happen is once you've asked me and you know, you can then see it. And then maybe not pull that person up and go, hey, you're a racist, you can't be like that. No, I don't want that. But what I want is you go in, why didn't you pass that ball in?
So you think, they talk about this unconscious bias.
Yeah.
So you're saying bring it, raise their awareness.
Of course.
And then if there's no action taken, then there's a problem.
For sure.
But they may just be ignorant of what's going on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I completely get that too.
Yeah.
I understand. Because there is a fundamental lacking in the education system, in schools and colleges and all sorts of, you know, learning places where these things are not taught. And I get that. But I also understand that on the other side of that, things in the homes are taught. It may be unconscious that you've heard mum and dad and aunt and uncle talk about these things. So in your deepest places that you don't really want to visit, that's what you think.
Yeah.
And then that manifests in a split second decision of whether or not you're going to pass the ball.
Yeah.
You don't know why. You just didn't. But if somebody then says to you, why didn't you do that? And you go, I don't know. And they go, no, no, no.
Find out.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Have a think and tell me why you didn't pass that ball.
Yeah.
And that person may not want to, they may realise that that's what they did. And they then may go, oh God, I'm not telling them that. I'll just say, I don't know. But then moving forward, what will happen is they'll go, I need to pass the ball. And I don't care who's on the end of it.
It sort of makes me think about your first example, that there was something going on in your head and there were people around you who were willing to help you.
Yeah.
To deal with a really tough thing. Mm-hmm. I know it was different, but it's a similar sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Rather than the other group. So our coaches need to be like those two firemen that said, I see you got a problem there.
Yeah.
Here's a way we deal with it.
Yeah.
Wow. What advice would you give to coaches? Because talking about these things for a lot of coaches, it terrifies them.
Of course it does. You
know, gender, that terrifies them. Yeah. Race, that terrifies them. There's probably something around class as well. And a lot of coaches don't like to talk about it. So what advice would you give to the coach to have that courage to deal with it?
Personally, I cover two of those topics you just did. I'm female and I'm mixed race. My personal experience of living my entire life with both those things, ask me. And I will tell you. Because you don't know, that doesn't make you racist. Because you don't know, it doesn't make you sexist.
Mm.
And if you ask me and speak to me on a level, we can have a very frank and open conversation. And I'm happy to teach you, for want of a better phrase, more than happy. And the questions you ask and the things you say, if there's no intent behind them, if there's no malicious intent behind them, it doesn't matter.
So be curious.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because it's the intent. It is absolutely the intent. You can talk to me about race and ask me, oh, well, you know, whatever this incident happened and I think is quite racist. And I'll turn around and say, well, no, I disagree. And this is why I disagree. Or absolutely, I agree. Because they meant malice simply because that person was black, Pakistani, Asian, you know. And maybe I'm, as a mixed race, maybe you are more heightened to the tone of voice and the particular word choices within a conversation. So you hear it over somebody that's never had to deal with it, never heard it, never listened to it, never been that way. So it's easier for me to spot and see. And you do, you feel it. You feel it in your soul. You can just feel it. But I do understand that people having never dealt with it, they won't understand, and that's fine. But speak to the people and they will tell you.
Because from a performance perspective, the example you've given, it's a missed pass. That could have been the pass. And we all know that at the top level, it happens, you do things fast.
For sure.
If you think about it too much, you've missed the chance.
Absolutely.
So from a performance coaching perspective, this might unlock the key as to why certain things are happening. It may not be the case, but it may be. So it's really useful to, it's almost like you're giving people an invitation to solve a problem.
100%.
100%. Can they email you? Can they phone you? You could.
I'm happy. Listen, I'm happy to help. And if I can help one person and change one person's mind, I'm.
Well, I did ask you earlier, didn't I? If I gave you a superpower, what would it be?
Yes.
And yours was really interesting. It was. You go on. You tell them what it was.
So I said in a recent experience, I've listened to other people's story of their interaction with racists and racism and things being said and stuff. And as much as I know it's out there, and as much as I know it's happened, and as much as I can look at people and say, yeah, you've definitely experienced racism, listening to the personal individual stories is a very, very different thing. And hearing their stories was painful. Even though I've been through it myself, and even though I know that they did, listening to it was really hard, really triggering. So because I know how it feels, if I was given a superpower, it would be to take that pain away from them. So they didn't have to feel that.
It's a bit like what the fireman did, wasn't it?
It definitely was, yeah. It sure was.
Quite an experience, that.
It sure was.
So where's the future? I know. Well, I'm going to make some vocals on the basis of this. But where do you see your future now? How do you see it?
Within what? Within rugby?
Life. If rugby is part of life, and you've got a little one. Not I say little one. He sounds like quite a big fella.
He's 17. He's a big lad. He's a big lad. Okay. So with rugby, I've gone back to thoroughly enjoying it, looking forward to my training, looking forward to playing, being really frustrated when games are cancelled for whatever reason, for the weather or for, you know, something else has come up, or, you know, and that's where I was when I first started playing. Coming to the end of my last season, my last sort of couple of seasons with the other team, it had completely taken it away, and it was a chore. It was a chore to go training, and it was a chore to play, and when the games were called off, I was relieved. But now I've got it all back.
The joy.
Yes, and I absolutely love it. It's like, for me, it's like my reset button. I have a stressful life, I have a stressful job. You know, being a single mum is not easy.
Yeah.
So going and playing on a Sunday is like my reset button.
Yeah.
And I get to go again. And I can start again Monday. And then by Friday, I'm done and I need to play rugby.
Wow.
And then we press the reset button and we go again.
So rugby's still a big part
of
life?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, don't see myself stopping anytime soon either.
And does your boy play?
He did for a short while, but he prefers basketball.
Oh, does he? Okay, yes. Cool. Well,
yeah.
Bit of spatial awareness. Might get him back from that as well.
Well, yeah.
If you're going to give coaches, WRU coaches or people that coach within Wales, a little bit of guidance or advice for how they could get the most out of a player, what would that suggestion be?
I think finding their reasons would be a good place to start. If you can continually tap into that, they will continually give 100% to absolutely everything. But I just think it needs to be a safe space for everybody. Massively a safe space. It needs to be the trust that whatever is going on, I can come to you and say, this is what's happening, and you go, we'll get to the bottom of it, don't worry.
Was that around that table that night with those two other fire people?
Yeah, for sure.
Safe place.
Yeah.
Able to express yourself.
Yeah.
And they seemed to... That you said clearly they weren't special people, they were just normal. No, it's actually normal to do this sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I didn't realise... It's not... Like, it's only... not. I say recently. It's only like that happened 20, 23 years ago. So it's only sort of in the last 10 years, I guess, that I've realised how normal that was. Prior to that, I held these men, and I'm not taking away from them, I still hold them quite highly, because if it wasn't for them, I don't know where I would be. I really just don't know where I would be. Because the gentleman who I was on that date with and we went to the rugby was a fireman.
Oh, right.
So had I not been in the job, I may never have come across him and I may never have come across rugby.
All right. Well, I'm glad, very glad that you took that rugby match.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. Had that experience not happened, I absolutely do not know where I would have been. So as much as they are very special to my story, it's not as special as being special, because it was normal.
Yeah.
That's what they should have done. That's what people should do.
Yeah.
You see somebody struggling, you can help. Help.
Wow. That's really powerful. I think we've come to our time, and first of all, thank you so much for giving up your time to do the podcast.
No problem.
It's been an absolute privilege, and we look forward to seeing you very shortly, perhaps in your shorts and your kit again. We look forward to that. Rafiq, thanks ever so much
for
joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been wonderful.